And the keel of my boat, I've got a 6.5 metre boat, which is about 20 metres with a 175 motor on it. We're just cruising along, and this bit of extremely hard rock with almost a point on it went straight into the keel of my boat. And the keel, the actual keel, the part that sticks down off the bottom of the boat, is only about 2 inches wide, so 5 centimetres wide, and it just jammed into it as if it was cutting into butter. The boat spun around 180 degrees with the tide, and I said, oh, I'll just rev off this like you do, and I just gunned it, went straight back, and it didn't move. And within minutes, this boat is now perched up on top of this rock, and it's starting to lean over. I'm inside the boat with my dog. The other two guys who were with me by this stage had jumped onto the side of the boat to try and steady it. I said, we're in real trouble here. What we've got to do is grab one of the 44s out of the boat, which should be fairly empty, and tie that on the side and try and, so if it does go into the water or slip, it'll stay upright. Well, by the time I tied it on, there was such an alarming angle, because you've got to remember, in a river and the it's dropping about 2 or 3 centimetres every few minutes, and the boat's leaning over and leaning over, and next thing the water came over the side. Albert Bevan Wigan, from One Arm Point, Aboriginal man, he jumped into the dinghy just as about to go and cast loose. So he had the dinghy and a spotlight in there, and he was able to see it all happen. The other guy thought he'd actually jumped into the water, but as the boat went over, he'd actually walked around like you do when a yacht goes over, and he ended up on the hull. It went over so quickly, most of our gear didn't even float out of it. And then before I realised, I'm under the dinghy, under the main boat, with all the petrol coming up through the bung holes and everything, the air holes, and the dogs in there with me clambering around. I got all ropes around my head, all around my neck, total darkness. I got about an inch of air underneath the boat, and this is a 20-foot boat, and it just happened in seconds. And only hours beforehand, I was talking on camera about how careful you've got to be in the Kimberleys with these huge tides, some of the biggest rises and fall of tide in the world. And that day we had 11.2 metre rise and fall, and I said on camera, one mistake up here you can lose your boat, one mistake in the Kimberleys you can lose your life. And I said at the end of it, or one of the guys said to me, he said, you're a bit dramatic, aren't you, Malcolm? I said, no.
What happened next?
I'm under the boat, I grabbed the dog, I pulled her down, she didn't take any water in her lungs, and she actually popped up before me, and of course she just panicked, and she just took off downstream. The guy in the dinghy went off after her, and within spotlight distance of us, there were 6 crocs between about 1.2 metres and 12 foot, because we were doing a crocodile survey, and we saw them, he saw them in the spotty, and what kept the crocs away from, I think, was the excessive noise and also the petrol that was now coming out of the boat everywhere, because we had 500 litres of fuel under the floor. So anyway, when I came up, I got on the boat and I was freezing cold. They threw a jumper and that to me because I was starting to really shake. Anyway, what happened? When the sun came up, the tide went down, we looked over on the bank and everywhere it's just oozy mud. But except right where the boat was, there was mud, but under the mud we could see a hard rock, and this rock had about a 60 degree slope on it. And we thought very carefully about it. We had plenty of time. We're just there with the tide drifting away, and the anchor had dropped down out of the bow of the boat, so the anchor had stuck on into the rocks and mud, and we were just floating there, you see, with the tide rushing past, and the other guy sitting in the dinghy tied up to us, and we're just thinking about what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So we said, right, if we get this boat over against this rock, and as the tide comes up on the next tide, we'll try and get it parallel to the bank. We'll get ropes out, tie it all up down as the tide drops. Hopefully, we'll get the boat to roll over on this rock and it'll come upright. And over a day, that's exactly what we did. We finally flicked it over, full of water still, and we drained the water out, and then we salvaged what we could. I mean, we ended up with a knife, a tin of baked beans. We found our other container of water. We found our two distress beacons. You can imagine the mud that had the back current as the boat was upside down and sideways for a while. The mud in this boat was unbelievable. Anyway, we got it up, and on 3 o'clock the next tide, we started drifting downstream. We put the 15 horsepower motor, which was off the dinghy, onto the stern of the main boat, our auxiliary, which you'd never go away without an auxiliary. And we put it on there and it wouldn't start. Oh, it wouldn't start. So we're drifting down the Glenelg River for an hour and a half, crashing into the mangrove, the green ants coming over, and the mosquitoes. not tens of thousands, but possibly millions of them, the huge saltwater mosquitoes. We rubbed ourselves all over with mud, black beanies on. We looked like something out of a B-grade commando film shoot. After an hour and a half, we found out what the trouble was. It wasn't the outboard, it was actually one of the fuel lines. We changed over that and we got going, and we went 65 hours non-stop on the little 15. We went all day and the rest of that night, all day and then all night, and we got the coolant and then the tyre changed, and then took another 5 hours to get round to Dogleg, the fuel dump there, and people sell fuel there, and they got the barge there, and we got borrowed a phone and sent out sat phone messages, and then we continued on and we got right down to Cone Bay. Went to the Barramundi farm there, and they were fabulous. And then the next, we did have a few hours sleep there. We'd gone for 100 hours at this stage.
How were you feeling by this stage, Malcolm?
It's a strange thing. We hardly had anything to eat. We weren't hungry, and we weren't that thirsty, because the adrenaline in your body seemed to counteract it. And we weren't tired. We were very cool and calm and collected through the whole exercise. But the next morning when we left Cone Bay, we went out of Cone Bay and ingoing tide, and then if people know King Sound, we then were catching the ingoing tide towards Derby, and we're going down across past Cone Bay, and then we got into Hell's Gate, which is a very dangerous narrow gap between rocks. We got spun through there. Next thing, we're down the bottom of Low Island, and you get out into that big, wide, dangerous area of Stokes' Bay. So we went ashore there, and we'd arranged for the Derby volunteer search and rescue guys to come out to about that point and tow us across, because we had spring tides, strong wind warning on Saturday, and they were just fantastic. They found us. Well, we could see them, they couldn't see us, because we were covered in mud. We had life jackets, all our swags and everything all drying out, and we were against the cliffs, and they couldn't see us, which was really strange. But it was another lesson in survival, how you can see a boat and they can't send you. So yeah, they'd arranged for us to send up smoke flares. We sent up smoke flares in the strong wind. Couldn't see the smoke flare. So I set up the big red parachute flare, which really goes up a long way. And I also had borrowed a radio off a dog leg, and I called them on Channel 16, and I said, come in at southeast, because I could see them as a dot on the horizon, because I thought that we'd be further out to sea. And I turned southeast, and then as I coming towards, I set the flare up. They came in, they hooked onto us, I stayed on the boat. And then they towed me across Stokes' Bay, which is notoriously rough. And here's me in a 20-foot boat bouncing like a tinny off the tops of these waves. And my back and neck and spine got squashed.
It sounds like a pretty harrowing experience. I mean, obviously you've had quite a deal of experience in the Kimberley, but what, nothing like it before?
No, you know, I've had my near misses. And I mean, I've been from Hobart to Port Moresby in small boats. I've been across Bass Strait in rubber duckies, and I've been up to Kimberley probably 50 times, and I've had it on rocks and things, but I've never, ever had an experience like this before. And I can only stress that no matter how experienced you are, you can always get into a situation.
So a lesson to other people in the Kimberley, and especially visitors, I suppose.
Oh. I always say now, the more and more people that are coming to the Kimberleys, going up, right through the Buccaneer Archipelago, going out from Derby, there's going to be more and more accidents. But those guys in Derby, they are fantastic. They're trying to set up a relay station on all the islands now. So with a $300 VHS radio, the whole of the Buccaneer Archipelago will be covered by radio contact. Now, one thing I must stress to people, they should carry their IPERB, which is your distress beacon, which you can set off, and that'll go to a satellite, and Canberra will know where you are. But what you must do is have it right next to the steering wheel in a bracket, and you keep stressing to everybody, practice. Grab that thing. Close your eyes. Grab it. Because when things go wrong, I had mine in amongst the plus 30 spray. I didn't have it in a bracket. I had another one in a bag. I carry two. I carry a private one. But in the turmoil, I didn't exactly know where they are. So you've got to know. And you just got to, even though it's a bit corny, you got to go through your survival techniques. You've got to go through your training techniques. I mean, I carry a magnifying glass, a big one that I can start a fire with. And I've carried that with me for 45, 50 years probably in the bush. Only used it once or twice. But, you know, just simple things. Make sure you don't carry all your water in one container. Make sure you don't carry all your fuel in one container. Keep going over all these things. And don't be a drama queen, but just keep going over everything and stress to the other people. And you've got to ask. I've asked people in boats now, can you swim? And they say, no. I say, well, why don't you, you tell us these things? If you can't swim, you've got to make sure you have a life jacket nearby. But anyway, we're fine. I'm suffering from delayed shock, but I'll be back up there again.